Hello and welcome to episode 165 of Drink the Movies. I'm Brian here, as always, with Michaela. And Michaela, sometimes you end up, you're driving across country to go to college, you steal a can of tuna, it turns into this whole thing, and you have to call in the big guns, my cousin Vinny, to help bail you out. And that's what we're doing this week. This is a movie that I have not watched since a single watch through on a VHS tape back in, I don't know, the late 1992 time frame. But this has become a beloved film for a lot of people, including yourself. So today we're talking about My Cousin Vinny. You looking forward to it, Michaela?
I am looking forward to it. This film is super nostalgic for me. It's one of the like a Saturday night or a Friday night films that we would have on VHS growing up in my late teens, and I would watch it with my dad and my stepmom, and that would be, they'd get a drink and I'd have a Coke, and we'd sit there and we'd watch the show and we'd laugh out loud about all, at all the same times and everything. But it's so I hadn't seen it in a while, so it was really good to see it again and see if it was really that funny or if it was just my nonsensical, sense of humor when I was 17.
Absolutely. And this is one is, bringing Joe Pesci to kind of the forefront. So, adults of that time would have been very familiar with Joe Pesci, Raging Bull, Goodfellas, JFK, stuff like that. But now, like, kids were familiar with Joe Pesci too, right? As just coming off the heels of Home Alone. Home Alone Part Two, I think, was due to come out later that same year. So it was kind of this I don't know. It was kind of propping up Joe Pesci to take on a leading role. And that's what happened here. And My Cousin Vinny. And I think because of that, a lot of people saw it. It was rated R. So it's not something that I necessarily would have seen, but was familiar enough. And it kind of drew in a lot of different audiences that it might have normally done. So yeah, pretty excited to go back and watch this one and talk about it today. So let's do this, Michaela. Let's take a quick break. We will be right back to whip up this week's drink, which is going to sound odd, but stick with us. We'll get there. We'll be right back.
So Brian, this cocktail, it's a little strange. We've had stranger for sure, but I feel like movies that I love, I make you do some weird fat washing of like
You do.
either rum or whiskey or a bourbon, right? We've done butterwash bourbon before. We've done like a I don't know, like a fat washed rye whiskey or something before. But this one, this cocktail calls for some prosciutto washed rum, which sounds kind of weird.
It does sound kind of weird, absolutely. So today's cocktail, it's called the Two Utes, which comes from that very famous line here in My Cousin Vinny. Two Utes, youths, youths. Sorry, judge there. So this comes from Don Angie's restaurant in New York City, and we found an article about it in Tasting Table, which had the recipe. We'll post that down in the show notes. But yeah, you sent this my way. I'm looking at it, and I'm like, prosciutto washed rum. Head scratcher right there, Michaela. I guess it's better than being washed and like that. Entire like five like giant spoonfuls of lard that the
Oh,
short order
right.
cook put
Oh, gosh.
on the grill
That
there
was
at
horrible.
the breakfast restaurant. So I guess prosciutto is a better pick. But I was looking at this cocktail then, and basically the Two Utes, it's like this, it's this Italian like summer like salad classic, which is just prosciutto and melon, right? Cantaloupe melon,
Sure.
that's the most delicious thing on the whole planet. So I said, well, in cocktail form, that couldn't be that bad. So let's give this a try. So what I had to do is I had to go out and find some rum. Now in the article, it specifically mentions Banks rum, which is a it's a blend of different rums from throughout the Caribbean, but I was having trouble finding that one. They actually had it at a couple of stores near me, but it looked like it was on clearance. It was way over on the other side of the city. I was like, I don't know. I don't know if that's going to be the right one to use. So I found a bottle of Ron Izalco rum, which is aged for 10 years. It's also a blended rum made from rums from Central America and the Caribbean. So I said, that's probably kind of on that same path right there. So grab my bottle of that. And then I went to the grocery store. I picked up a package of prosciutto. I ate all of the slices of prosciutto except for one, which I took. I put into a clean mason jar. I poured on 2 cups of rum and I let it sit. for 8 hours. The fat wash is on Michaela. So after the 8 hours, I fished out that piece of prosciutto. I did not eat it. Maybe I should have. I don't know. Maybe that was a
Oh,
failure on my part.
I don't
I
know.
did not. It did kind of like preserve it though. Prosciutto is pretty floppy. It was kind of like it had like hardened up in there. It had like I
Yeah.
guess like sucked out all that. So I got that out of there, sealed the jar back up, stuck it in the freezer for like 4 hours, and that gives the kind of the fat particles in your liquor to harden, basically. That's how you make a fat wash liquor here, whatever the instance is. So after those bits have frozen, you can go ahead and strain that through some like cheesecloth, which is what I did. So you get a nice clear fat washed rum in this instance, prosciutto washed rum, and it smelled of sugar cane and prosciutto. It was very interesting. Very interesting, I will say the least. But it was a nice addition to this cocktail. So we've got our prosciutto washed rum. Michaela, what do we do next?
All right. So you get this prosciutto washed rum. You're gonna take an ounce of that. You're gonna put that into a shaker tin with an ounce of pureed cantaloupe. That's right, pureed cantaloupe. Then you're gonna take half an ounce of cantaloupe syrup and add that to it. I think the reason why you do this is because cantaloupe is very heavy. It's like a dense melon, right? It's not like honeydew. It's going to be it's not as like dense as like a mango, but it's going to add a lot of consistency and a lot of like that creamy mouthfeel to it. But the puree can get a little hard, or not hard, but like there's not enough liquor or liquid in it to really work well with the shaker. So that's what you do. You take an ounce of the rum, ounce of the cantaloupe puree, half an ounce of the cantaloupe syrup. We made our own cantaloupe syrup by using the puree, straining it a few times so it was just the cantaloupe juice, and then adding equal parts of that and sugar, and then heating it just until the sugar melted, and then cooling it back down again. You're going to add all of that in with half an ounce of freshly squeezed lemon juice into your shaker tin. You're going to shake it up until it's really, 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 really cold. And then you're going to serve it in a rocks glass that's got crushed ice in it. I think that's really important because as you drink this, you don't want the cantaloupe puree and stuff. It needs to stay really cold in order to stay like not I don't know, congealed at the bottom of your glass. So you can garnish this with like a mint leaf if you want to. We garnished it with a mint leaf and some amazing prosciutto, like a wrapped level of prosciutto. And that made a really nice snack halfway through the drink, I must
It does.
say. I was
I'm
really
just,
surprised by this drink because
I'm gonna start
I
garnishing
love
everything with prosciutto.
I love prosciutto and cantaloupe like as a appetizer or when you're eating al fresco and it's like nice and summery out. I think this seemed like a really inspired drink, but I didn't know if this was going to work or not. This drink was absolutely delicious. I have to say, really good.
Yeah, it was really good. And I again, just hearing about it, seeing the ingredients, you don't know how this is going to really come together. I guess in theory it sounds good because as we mentioned, we both really like, kind of prosciutto and melon, that pairing together. And that is exactly what this tasted like. It tasted like a liquefied prosciutto and melon salad, and it was delicious. It felt exceptionally high end, like you'd be at some very fancy dining establishment, like Don Angie's in New York City, having this. We did talk a little bit about Michaela that this is probably a little bit impractical for just a normal kind of cocktail to put together. But if you have some cantaloupe left over, maybe you've gotten one, you've sliced it up, you've had your fill of eating it, maybe you want to try something else, you can make some of this puree and whip one of these up. But this was really good. It felt very inspired. I love on the article it talks a little bit about the restaurateurs there from Don Angie's and kind of the inspirations for it and how it takes its notes from this film, and I like that a lot. And this cocktail was a good one. It's beautiful, it's delicious, it hit all the right notes, and yeah, just felt really inspired and absolutely loved it.
Yeah, no, this was really good. I don't even like cantaloupe. There, I said it. I only like it when it's like we're
Wow.
wrapping a prosciutto around it or when we're drinking this drink, in all honesty. So give it a shot. I mean, I have to say the you definitely taste the rum. You didn't taste the rum as much when you were
Not as much, yeah.
sipping it, but I definitely tasted the rum and the prosciutto. Like I think the prosciutto washed rum. It didn't taste like prosciutto, like you were drinking an appetizer. It wasn't like that, but
It didn't
definitely
taste like
like
ham
the.
water, yeah, for
It did
sure.
not. It did not. But the mouthfeel was really creamy. I definitely felt like it was a richness that prosciutto has that like you would be missing if you like, I don't know. Prosciutto just seems more sophisticated than bacon. So this drink was just, I don't know, very grown up, very which is funny because as we watch My Cousin Vinny, right, where this guy is anything other than like a professional grown-up attorney trying to save his nephew and his nephew's best friend from the chair down in Alabama, you know?
Yeah, for sure. So, yeah, that is the Two Utes cocktail. Give it a try, or let us know if you've ever been to Don Angie's and had something else that was good, or if you have any other My Cousin Vinny cocktails, please pass those our way. But for now, Michaela, we've got a little bit of this prosciutto washed rum left. Let's go ahead and mix up another one of these cocktails, and we'll be right back to chat about this week's film, My Cousin Vinny.
And only one man can save them.
We need to call an attorney, a great attorney.
He's not your typical hero.
We got an attorney in the family.
Great, who?
He's
My Cousin Vinny.
You stick out like a sore thumb around here.
Oh, yeah, you blend.
Spoiler warning for My Cousin Vinny. If you've not yet seen this film starring Marissa Tomei and Joe Pesci, you should stop everything right now and you should go watch it. You've had a lot of time. It was released in 1992, but you should go watch it. You should laugh along with Marissa Tomei's amazing accent and how she talks about going to find and shoot a deer, which is interesting. And then you should make yourself a Two Utes cocktail because that is also delicious and worth your time. And then you can come back and you can be with us as we chat about My Cousin Vinny. What are
You
you
can
laughing
be
at me
with
for?
us. Absolutely,
Imagine
grab.
you're, I should start with like, imagine you're listening to a podcast, okay?
Well, that's right. No,
None,
Oscars for you, but we'll get to that here in a second.
none
Yeah,
at all.
as you mentioned, Michaela, this was released in 1992. It was directed by Jonathan Lynn, and it stars Ralph Macchio and Mitchell Whitefield as our criminal masterminds, Bill and Stan. But luckily, Bill has a cousin, My Cousin Vinny. Joe Pesci plays Mike Vinny here, the first-time trial lawyer, and Marissa Tomei plays his always helpful fiance, Mona Lisa Vito, which is maybe the best name in all of film history. Marissa Tomei went on to win the Oscar for Best Supporting Actress, so congratulations there, Marissa Tomei, and she is by far the bright spots of this film for sure. Michaela, you watched this a bunch times growing up. I watched it one time growing up, I will say. It was I don't know, I remember My Cousin Vinny being like a big deal at the time when it came out. You know, it seemed like it was pretty well received, obviously won the Oscar there. I think there were some other kind of awards that it got nominated for, but you have quite the history with this one. Is that what led you to put it on the schedule for us here
It
today?
is. It is. I mean, I feel like I wanted something a little lighthearted. It's right before like the summer really
Yeah,
starts and
trials to get executed is pretty
I
lighthearted, I will
mean,
say,
come on
Michaela.
now. Look, to be fair, it is a really serious topic, but they end up making it seem like it's one giant joke about like shoplifting a can of tuna. So, you know, I didn't I'm not the one who made the rules here,
That's
okay?
true. That's true. That's true. Well, let's talk about the movie here a little bit, Michaela. We're introduced straight away to kind of these two kids, right? Bill and Stan. They are driving their way through Alabama. I guess we go on to learn that they're from New York, basically got accepted into, was it UCLA, I think it was, on a full scholarship. And what better way to get there than to drive? And they'll go through the South, I think, because they said that the weather was going to be nicer, potentially, because they're in a pretty rad convertible. Along the way, they stop to get some gas, grab a bite to eat. I really like they're in this little convenience store, and they're like comparison shopping, like the cans of beans to see which one is like 41 cents versus which one is 42 cents. Because apparently these kids are don't have much in the way of money. So when you're trying to get all of your snacks for the road, you get a can of tuna, you slip it into your pocket, you forget to pay for it on your way out, and that's going to land you in a bit of hot water, Michaela.
Well, it wouldn't have normally, and to be fair to the South, it wouldn't have then either. The fact that they realize like I don't know, 10, 15 minutes after they left this the Sack of Suds convenience store, they're like, oh, we should go back. And they're like, absolutely not. No, don't do that. This place is archaic. I mean, it really does make fun of all the things the South, right? His friend, Rothenstein, he's like they're inbred here, they sleep with their sisters, some of them do, who knows. I mean, Stan is really anti-South basically, and Bill is caught in this rock, in this hard place, because he totally admits to taking a can of tuna. What he doesn't realize that he's admitting to the sheriff is that there's been a murder, and the guy who gave him like half a slushy and these 22 items minus the can of tuna was shot and killed. And so everybody seems to have witnessed these two kids, Bill and Stan, do this in a green convertible, and they're like, we promise we didn't do it. What are we going to do? They're in the middle of nowhere. They only can make one phone call. Bill calls his mom, and of course his mom is like freaking out, and he's like, we didn't do it, it's murder, but we didn't do it. I don't know, mom, what do I do? And apparently there's a lawyer in the family that can drop everything and just somehow has passed the bar, or gonna pass the bar, or something in Alabama,
And
and it's all gonna be fine. My cousin Vinny's gonna come in and take care of it. It's gonna be great.
Hello, Ma. We're in Wazoo. It's in Beecham County, Alabama, Ma. Not too good, Ma. We've been arrested. Ma, Ma, please. Ma, please. First of all, we didn't do it, all right? Murder. Ma, Ma, please. Ma, Ma, it's a mistake, all right? We must look like the guys who did it.
That's right. And apparently he'll do it for free, which is good because, as we've established, these kids are poor. It's a bit of a plot hole for me because I think what's his name? Stan it says that he can't get a hold of his parents because they're like backpacking in Patagonia. So apparently your family can do that, but you have to buy 41-cent can of beans. Come on now. Come on now. But yeah, so they call in the favor, right? To my cousin Vinny there. So we're introduced then to Vinny. Vinny rolls in. It's in this very sweet, very lengthy car. It looks pretty good. It's bumping some good tunes, and outstep these two characters who could not stand out anymore if they tried. We've got Vinny, played by Joe Pesci, and his fiance, Mona Lisa Vito, coming out. I like Mona Lisa here has like this little like point and shoot camera. She just gets out. She's taking pictures of everything, and Vinny is down looking at the tire apparently. Your tires get stuck in the mud in Alabama. Get fix your roads there, please. We don't get stuck in the mud. And he's looking up at her, and he's like, will you stop it? You're sticking out like a sore thumb. Meanwhile, he's like dressed head to toe in like this like leather suit kind of thing. He's got like these cowboy boots on with like these like silver tips on
Silver
them. He's like, I'm
tips.
trying to fit in. I've got my cowboy boots. I'm fitting in. You stand out like a sore thumb.
Oh yeah, you blend. She's so great. Oh, Marissa Tomei's character is just, man, Lisa's amazing. She makes fun of Vinny the whole time, like. And it's kind of a strange dynamic, these two. I really love the scene. They kind of get settled in one of their many hotel rooms that they end up getting into. But there's a drip on the faucet, and it's kind of like foreplay for them, where he's like, why didn't you turn the handle more? And she's like, I turn the handle just right, and I use this calibrated machine that does it. And I look at the manual, and it's like this thing where they like, I don't know, it's kind of strange. They get off on arguing with each other, and then they end up kissing, and it's kind of interesting. But Vinny starts to really panic kind of early on, where he realizes that he is kind of weighing over his head. He's never done a murder trial. He's never done any sort of trial. He's never been a court litigator at all. We meet the judge, who's played by the amazing Fred Gwynne. This is his last film, unfortunately, but he's pretty great in it. And there's this scene where the judge really explains to Vinny that, hey, he'll let him go ahead and represent the court, even though he hasn't passed the bar in the state of Alabama. He'll go ahead and let that happen, but he needs to understand the procedures. And Vinny is immediately like really scared that, because he doesn't know how to do anything, not even enter a guilty or non-guilty plea, which I could probably do, even though I'm not a lawyer. You know, he starts to really worry that he's gonna make a mistake and it's gonna get these two kids killed, right?
All I ask from you is a very simple answer to a very simple question. There are only two ways to answer it, guilty or not guilty.
Your Honor, my clients didn't do anything.
Once again, the communication process is broken down.
That's right. Yeah, no law school degree here for drink the movies, either of us. But I think we probably could have entered a plea of guilty or not guilty. Yeah, I really like the introduction to the judge here. Fred Gwynne is excellent. A lot of times in like these like comedy like court things or even like more serious court things, the judge comes off as really kind of a jerk. But Judge Chamberlain, he doesn't really come off like a jerk because you're watching alongside of him. Vinny just like bumble his way through this, and you're like, yeah, the judge is right. This guy is a mess. But you know, Vinny is going to go in. He's gonna plead his case. He's gonna be like, yeah, of course I'm a trial lawyer. I've done all of this defending up in New York. You know, I was at the Son of Sam. Well, not him, but the guy they arrested before him. I did that. You know, got him off. I have this really good, wins and loss records. And Judge Chamberlain says, okay, that sounds good enough. So yeah, when it comes time to enter the plea of guilty or not guilty, Vinny has no idea what's going on. He's going to end up being held in contempt of court, which is kind of another recurring gag in this thing. And I really like it. He uses his phone call, calls Mona Lisa to come bail him out there. She yells at her. You know, kind of in the courtroom to come bail her out. And I like every time he gets arrested for contempt, he seems like more and more like glad about going to jail. Like he doesn't ever seem like that phased about it, you know, because he's just learning on the fly.
Yeah, he's like, look, you know, you're gonna. So they're having, I don't know, hot dogs. Another piece to this film that I find so amazing is the places they find to eat in this Bumsville, Alabama place. Okay, they eat at the place that literally serves breakfast, lunch, or dinner. That's what it's called. You see the dude who literally takes like half a cup of lard and puts it out what both you know on the grill before serving them grits, explaining what a grit is because they've never seen grits before. But they're eating at this place where it's like chili hot dogs and it looks totally disgusting. And of course, Marissa Tomei, who's like really thin and beautiful, she's in this like super tight mini skirt and she's like got this dainty spoon like trying to eat this, and you can tell that it's probably disgusting. And he's trying to explain to her, he's like, you know, I didn't get to go to court and watch because I had to work nights and I had to be at the shop and I was going to school and I didn't get to court and see all these things. And she's like, okay, well, what can I do to help? And he's like, nothing. I don't want your help. I need to do this all myself. And he's explaining to her that I'll just keep bailing me out. It's fine. And then she lets him know she can't keep bailing him out because they're almost out of money. And she, you know, tried to like hustle the money by playing pool, but she got stiffed. And then there's this whole bit about this guy that he tries to go and collect and like he doesn't have the money. And so he's like, how about I just beat you up? And he's like, okay, so now I get to beat you up and I get the $200. Okay, sounds great. But there's that whole bit. I love all these little vignettes that like carry through the whole show because it all comes together really brilliantly at the end.
Yeah, for sure. It is all these little vignettes, and yeah, it kind of starts there with their first night in the hotel. I like they're laying there, and then this is it this train comes through like, or no, there's a the steam whistle that goes off every day at like 5:30. He asks, you know, what's the deal with the steam whistle? He's like, that's to let the everyone in the town know that it's time to get up, which I guess could be true in like one of these little small industrial towns, right? Because presumably everyone in the town works at that place, so maybe that's the case there. And then they move the hotels and they get woken up by a train rolling through town. And I love this. He goes down, Vinny goes down to talk to the desk clerk there at the hotel, and is like, does that train come through every day at 5 o'clock? And the guy's like, he's like, no, that's it's pretty rare that comes through at 5 o'clock. And then of course the next morning, you know, comes through at 5 o'clock again. He goes down to confront him, and probably my favorite line in this in the whole movie is he says, you told me that rarely happens. And the guy says, I know, it normally comes through at 4:20 or something like that. It's so hilarious. I love it. I love it so much. And yeah, it's kind of a recurring theme that he keeps getting, you know, held in contempt, going to jail. He can't get a good night's sleep. He's trying to read this book. I like they show him every night reading this book that Judge
Looks
Chamberlain
like
gives him,
Homer's
right? It's
Odyssey. It's so
yeah,
big.
it's so big. Presume if you go to law school, you have to be really good at reading, is what I hear. But Yeah, he gives him this huge book and he's like reading it every night in the hotel, but it never looks like he like makes any sort of like headway on it. He's only ever about 20 pages into the book, and I like that a lot. And yeah, that's kind of getting us set up here for the dynamics, I guess, of this town, right? Between Vinny, between Judge Chamberlain, and between the the Attorney General there, Jim Trotter, who's played by Lane Smith.
Yesterday you told me that freight train hardly ever comes through here at 5 a.m. in the morning.
I know. She's supposed to come through at 10 after 4.
Yeah, the part about not being able to sleep, right? He articulates this so well, Vinny does, when he and Lisa get into another argument, right? They're out in this hunting lodge that the DA has. Because the DA understands how things are done here, right? And the DA is befriending Vinny. Vinny thinks that he's like pulling one over on him. He's like, I'd like to get a look at your files. And he's like, oh, well, I'll have my secretary fax everything over to you. No big deal. And he's like, what? Okay. I had no idea I would get all this stuff on him. But he also lets him like stay in his hunting lodge, thinking that this is gonna be how he gets some sleep. What he doesn't realize is in the middle of, I don't know, the nowhere in Alabama, there are screeching owls. And it's like one of the best scenes because Vinny doesn't mess around, man. He just goes and gets the biggest gun he can find that he can carry by hand. And he goes out to the porch and he like shoots up the trees
doesn't
around
even look
him.
Around.
Doesn't even look around. Doesn't try and figure out what it could possibly be. Doesn't recognize it as a screeching owl at all. And I knew what that was. It was. And he just he like empties the entire clip out there. Right. And then he's like, nah, this isn't going to work. But he and Lisa are having a fight on this porch, and she's like, look, you know, we had said that we were getting married. You had to win your first case and then we could get married. Meanwhile, 10 years later, my niece, the daughter of my sister, is getting married. And the way this trial is going, I'm never getting married, Vinny. We ain't never getting married. And poor Vinny is like, I really don't need this to be the cherry on top of all this other stuff. I got giant loud whistles. I got pigs. I got slaughtered pigs next to me. I got two kids that may get the electric chair. And on top of all of this, your biological clock is ticking like this, right? He's like, can we, your life, our marriage, the future of everything we know, can it get any more dire for us? Can we? And it's so great. I love the way they argue. Oh, the chemistry between them, given the fact that they are, that there seems to be a pretty large age difference. The chemistry between the two of them was spot on. I love it so much.
Yeah, it's really good. It's really good. And it's not all bad for Vinny, right? He's got a couple of wins. And of course, you know, Jim Trotter just happily sends over all of the court documents because that's called discovery. We learn from Mona Lisa. That's pretty good. And he's also going to get, you know, kind of the well wishes from his nephew there, Bill, right? He goes and talks to him. Stan has decided he's going to move on. He says, Vinny, this guy is a knucklehead. I can't entrust my life to this guy. I'm going to go with the defense attorney, you know, that's going to be provided by the state. I'm going to go with him. But Bill says, all right, Vinny, here's the deal. I'm going to let you talk to the first witness. If that goes okay, then I'll stick with you. You know, it's, you know, no harm, no foul. When you're waiting for the electric chair. And I like they're like hanging out or they're not hanging out. They're in prison there, Bill and Stan, and they're kind of going over this, you know, whether they should stick with Vinny or not. And then like the whole, like the lights to the prison, like dim because they're, you know, using that electric chair over in the next building. So pretty ominous, pretty ominous. That's a lot of faith to put in your cousin Vinny.
It is a lot of faith. And I love the first scene where they do that cross-examination because Stan has decided to go with the public defender who actually sounds pretty good at first, right? He's like, look, you got there's a lot of witnesses. You guys got a lot of evidence, circumstantial as it is, but it's all against you guys. You need to let me know what's going on. He goes out there and unfortunately he has this terrible stage fright stutter. He doesn't have it normally, but he gets out there and it's pretty funny. But he can't make two sentences together. He can't string two words together, let alone like a true defense. So Bill and Stan are then properly freaking out that now it's all up to Vinny. And Vinny just kind of sits there and argues with this guy about grits. And that's what ends up turning the whole case around because the witness swears that he was beginning to cook his breakfast when he saw the two, Bill and Stan, go into the sack of suds, and he was sitting down to eat when he saw the people who had murdered the convenience store clerk run back to their green convertible and walk off. Well, they get into this big argument about how long it actually takes to make grits. No self-respecting Southerner uses instant grits. And so it takes about 20 minutes, and that's just how it works. So there was plenty of time for somebody else to be committing this crime, not Bill and Stan. And that's when things start, the scale starts to tip, and both Bill and Stan start to have more faith in Vinny, and Vinny starts to have some self-confidence within himself and starts to think about things a little bit differently. And of course, he couldn't do any of that if it wasn't for his lovely Lisa, who's been taking bunches of pictures and trying to help in as much as she can.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's right. Yeah. And then we get into kind of the trial bit, right? They've established that these two are ready to stand trial. And you mentioned that first kind of witness there, where he cross-examines him and gives him the one up. The public defender gets fired, very, very promptly there, and decides he's going to go with Vinny too. And Vinny's starting to win over the hearts and minds, I guess, of the people there. Everyone maybe except for Mona Lisa, who's still being rubbed a little bit the wrong way by Vinny's inability to let her aid in his new job as trial attorney. We get to the second witness there. You get a little bit of a montage of Vinny going around town, interviewing the witnesses, right? That's what you can do, right? You get the witness list, you can go talk to him and see what's up. He goes to the second guy's house, and he's like, what is that? Is that brown? He's like taking pictures around his house there while he's talking to him. You don't really understand what it's for. But then when the second witness goes up onto the witness stand there, and he's talking to him, he's asking him where he could see, and he's got all these pictures, right? And he's like, oh, he had to look through this window screen. It's all dirty. You had to look through these trees. You had to look through these bushes. How many bushes? Five? No, it's six there. So could you really make out that car? Definitely couldn't.
Definitely could not. Definitely could not. And the cincher is the next day, right? He gets a call from the DA who's again, very friendly. Identical. He's this good old Southern boy. And he's like, hey, I got a new witness. I just got it. It just landed on my lap, and the judge is definitely going to, admit this witness. And Vinny gets it together. He helped Lisa, helps him find that big book of procedure, Alabama law procedure stuff, figures out where to go and cite all of the reasons why this witness shouldn't be presented. It's totally overruled, but the judge is starting to be impressed by Vinny himself, which is pretty cool. And this key witness is like an expert of tires or cars for the Federal Bureau of Investigation. And he testifies that the tire sample from the scene of the crime, where there's this big tire skid on the road, it matches the same rubber as the wheels of the tire of Bill and Stan's green convertible. And so he's like, hey, it's identical. And this cinches the case for the DA. But then Vinny is at lunch looking over at the pictures that Lisa did for him. And they're having a bit of a spat because Lisa's like, I can't help. I don't know what's going on. And Vinny's like, look, I got like 13 minutes before these kids are going to get sentenced to death. So I need to look at this. But then he sees one of the pictures she takes and realizes that she can help him with her expert knowledge of vehicles themselves. So he puts her on the stand as an expert witness to rebut the FBI expert witness. And she's able to explain in way more detail than I can properly do in this podcast why this car, these tracks could not have possibly been made by Bill and Stan's car, but by a different car.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you get the expert witness comes in there. There is a third witness as well, with this older lady that has these very thick glasses on, and he goes back and turns out she needs a new prescription. But yeah, then this expert witness comes on to basically go over the details of these tire tracks and how they were made from this tire of this make and size that comes exactly from the same as the Buick Skylark, right, that the kids were driving there at the beginning of the film. So, it looks like the goose is cooked here, and then says, but yeah, Vinny sees that picture and is like, wait a minute, that doesn't seem right. Let me get my own expert witness up here. Mona Lisa, right? So she comes. She's all mad at Vinny now at this point, right? She's just been trying to help this whole time, and Vinny's like, "Why are you? You're mad at me because I can't figure out how you can help me? What's up with that?" So she's very combative. She doesn't want to go up and do it. They basically have like the bailiff like arrest her and like take her up to the stand. So she has to go. Vinny asks if he can, treat the witnesses as hostile, but she's going to get her turn to finally be helpful here. This instance.
Will you please answer the counselor's question?
No, I hate him.
Your Honor, may I have permission to treat Ms. Vito as a hostile witness?
You think I'm hostile? Now wait till you see me tonight.
Do you two know each other?
Yeah, she's my fiancée.
Well, that would certainly explain the hostility.
Jim Trotter goes up and is asking her questions to see if she really is an expert in this field, and she gives it right back to him, which is really pretty great. And then she talks a lot of car things. Not a big car guy myself, so I don't know if what she was saying was true or not, but it sounds pretty good coming from the coming from Mona Lisa there. Seems like she is pretty credible. And it turns out that there is another car that potentially could be the case. And luckily, this small town sheriff here in Alabama is going to do the right thing and do a little bit of digging here at the 11th hour.
That's right. And it's really cool to see this because this sheriff is an imbecile, first of all, because he's the one who basically booked these kids for murder in the first place without explaining to them that they were being booked for murder. Like, I don't I big plot hole there. But this guy finally kind of comes good at the end because he does some work that Vinny has asked him to do. He at first he's like, absolutely not. And he's like, come on, dude, I really don't have the time. Can you please make a phone call? So he does. And he makes a phone call and he calls another state. He calls around and he finds out that there were two gentlemen that were in a green, similarly looking green convertible, and also had a weapon on them that was the same weapon that was which bullet was inside the poor convenience store clerk. So they were able to effectively clear Bill and Stan. And so the DA wants to dismiss all charges, which is great. Everybody gets to go home. Bill and Stan get to go to college. Their lives are not ruined. And Vinny is under the gun now to get out. He just wants to like leave because the judge has been on his tail about, hey, I don't know if you're really who you say you are. And the Judge Chamberlain is had put in a phone call to like verify all of the credentials that Vinny had troped up and told him all about. And so Vinny's trying to get out as soon as he can.
Yeah, that's right. And everyone, I like he's definitely trying to get out of town there before the judge can put two and two together that Vinny Gambini is not this attorney that he's been claiming to be this entire time. And I like he's trying to get out of there and like everyone is stopping to congratulate him and all of this stuff. But finally, Mona Lisa gets the car pulled up, but not before Judge Chamberlain stops Vinny and says, "Hey, I just got off the phone with the I don't know, someone up in New York. You said that you were a pretty good trial attorney. It turns out you're a really good trial attorney." And it turns out, his old mentor had put in a good word for him. Mona Lisa to the rescue again, right? She calls his old mentor from New York, this judge who calls down and puts in a good word for him. And then, yeah, everything is all well that ends well. Mona Lisa and Vinny are off into the sunset, but not before Vinny can say, "Well, I guess we can get married now." And I like they continue their little bickering, right? Mona Lisa doesn't want to just go and have a wedding. She wants to have a big wedding in the church with all the family and all that stuff there. And that's where it ends, right? The kids are out of trouble. Vinny has successfully navigated being a trial attorney, and maybe things are going to be on the up and up for Vinny and Mona Lisa here going forward. So, Michaela, you mentioned this is a very nostalgic film for you to go back and watch. I had not watched it since I don't know, 92 or 93 probably. So it was interesting going back to see what I thought about it. And this one was pretty good, and it wasn't in the instances where I thought it was going to be, right? You got Vinny there, Joe Pesci. You kind of assume that he's going to be pretty good. You have the Karate Kid himself, Ralph Macchio, is in this. You think maybe he's going to be good, but for me, it's all Marissa Tomei, obviously. No joke there, winning the Oscar. But I really liked Fred Gwynne here as Judge Chamberlain Holler. I think that those were probably the two big keys for me here. But what about this film? What is it that you like about it?
I like that it I like that it's so it's still funny to me. I mean, and it's stuck pretty well. Like it has lasted. The humor is still pretty funny. There's only a couple of things that would be questionable now that it makes fun of. The humor kind of is lasting to me. I really love the idea of this kind of fish out of water who comes into a place that he doesn't know. He's armed with like the one person that he trusts in the world to like, help do almost the impossible. And he wanted to do it all himself, but he couldn't. I kind of like that. I really like the idea of the trial attorney, that whole piece, because this offers a very interesting look at, hey, everybody knows this that these two are innocent, but it's a question of, can we do the job and introduce doubt, or can we prove it beyond a reasonable doubt? And that's all they had to do, and so they were able to we were able to do that, and that was kind of cool. I mean, Marissa Tomei as Mona Lisa Vito is insane. She's so good in it, and she just, I mean, every time I watch her on screen, it's, I mean, I've probably seen this film 100 times, and every time she's just insane. She's so wonderful. The chemistry and the timing between her and Joe Pesci is great. And Joe Pesci had done, you said it, right? He had done Home Alone. Goodfellas came out around this time as well. Like this was starting to be his really big established like base and foundation of the credentials of acting for him, for that set him up for now. He's like a god at the Oscars, right? He shows up and everyone's like, oh my gosh. And it's this it's it funny funnily enough, it's this time period, this this film really helped lay that foundation. So did it win a bunch of Oscars for cinematography or art direction? No, but it's a fun film. It's a good time. And it reminds me of my dad and my stepmom. They love it when I do the imagine your idea bit. I'm not going to do it because this is not an explicit podcast, but you should go watch that scene because it's hilarious, and it probably is the thing that won Marissa Tomei her Oscar. It's hilarious.
Yeah, it's
So good.
the very good monologue there about the deer, probably that did it. Yeah, this one was pretty fun. I did like it. I thought that it was humorous. I really like that. It's kind of very much this like fish out of water sort of thing for Vinny, both in terms of being this New Yorker being in Alabama, but then also being kind of thrust into a work position that you're not able to do, and he just keeps kind of failing upwards, I guess, in that instance. But yeah, it was pretty funny. I thought that a couple of the like the comedic bits were a little kind of redundant. There's a big like miscommunication sort of thing, which is what lands the kids in hot water at the first part, and then kind of your first like introduction to Vinny is in the courtroom, which is basically just kind of relying on that same kind of miscommunication gag there in terms of his interaction with the judge. So I thought a little bit of that. But yeah, it was really funny. It was really fun to like go back and watch this and to see, because now we think of Marissa Tomei as being in the Spider-Man films and all these things that she's continued to do, but to see her earlier on in her career was really good. And then the supporting cast of characters, I mentioned Judge Chamberlain, Fred Gwynne, but Lane Smith is Jim Trotter, also very excellent. Bruce
Oh, he's
McGill,
great.
who played Sheriff Farley, also really good. Kind of these characters around town, especially you've got Chris Ellis, who's playing JT, who owes the $200 bet, and Vinny keeps going back to him before he finally just kind of sucker punches him and takes his 200 bucks. There is pretty good. So this was a fun one to go back and revisit. Michaela, it's probably not something I ever would have watched again, to be completely honest, had you not put it on there. And it led us to one of Probably my favorite, most inspired cocktails that we've done in a long time from the Two Utes there from Don Angie's restaurant up in New York City. So we're gonna have to go to New York City maybe and pay Don Angie a visit and try one of these out there. But yeah, this was really fun. So let us know at home what you think about My Cousin Vinny and what you thought about the film, if you watched it, if it was one you grew up watching, if it's something that you've not seen in a long time, or something you watch all the time, if it's one of your favorites, because apparently a lot of people claim this to be one of their favorite films. So let us know that. Let us know if you make yourself a Two Utes, or if you have any other good cocktail recommendations to go along with My Cousin Vinny. We want to know that. We want to see pictures of yours. We want to do all that stuff. And you can do that on our social medias. That's at Drink the Movies on Instagram and Threads and Blue Sky and X and Facebook.com/drinkthemovies. You can go to our website, www.drinkthemovies.com. That's where we have pictures of our stuff, episode recaps, links to the merchandise shop. All that stuff is there. Speaking of merchandise, we've got t-shirts there on the merchandise shop now as well. So go check those
Woo!
Out if you're interested in that. And we appreciate everyone who has taken some time out to take a look at the shop, and especially the people who have made a purchase from that shop. We definitely appreciate that's pretty amazing. Something new we're trying to get into here for the podcast. So that is all of that stuff. Check out patreon.com/drinkthemovies if you want some more behind the scenes stuff, extra episodes, hangouts, all that stuff. It's patreon.com/drinkthemovies. But the best way to show support for the podcast is to, share us with your friends, share us on social media, but to also make sure that you're subscribed. Michaela, where can people do that?
You can find us on Apple Podcasts, we're on Spotify, we're on Good Pods, anywhere on your rectangle where you're listening to podcasts, we are there. We are all over that thing. We are all over it. So there is a button that if you look down, not while you're driving, if you're driving, be safe. But if you're not driving, look down, there's a subscribe button. Press that button if you're liking what you're hearing. And if you like what you're hearing enough, I would be grateful. We would all be grateful if you would share us on social media, share us on all the things, tell your friends, put a 5-star review down. We cannot do this without your support. We are so knocked out every week that you are spreading your love of movies and cocktails and sharing that with us. It's the coolest thing ever. And we're really grateful for bringing all the Drink the Movies goodness to the world.
Absolutely. So that is going to wrap it up here for My Cousin Vinny. Let us know what you thought about the film. Let us know if you try one of those cocktails. Thank you so much for joining us, and we'll talk to you next time on
Drink
Drink
the
the Movie.
Movies. Maybe it was bad time to bring it up.